Do you want to just redo that?
From where? From the start?
I don't know, because it was sort of got weird there. It's kind of the Ricky Fowler commercial. That got weird.
Max Homa picks up his first PGA Tour win at Quail Hollow. Brooks Koepka is coming to Canada, and Scotty is back from Ireland, still sounding absolutely terrible, but he brought us some Irish whiskey, so we'll be all right. Welcome to episode 13 of the Flagstick.com Tee Talk Podcast. I'm Stefan Tiedorf. Sitting across from me is the man that makes all of this happen, Tee Talk producer Nick Gallinger. How are you, Nick?
Well, you're switching it up this week.
I did it. I'm keep you guys ready.
I guess on our feet.
Man, you got boosted up, and I go away and I get shuffled down.
Well, he didn't bring us, so that's what happens. But that voice you hear is our co-host, Scott McLeod, the associate publisher of Flagstick.com and a PGA Canada professional all the way back from Northern Ireland. How are you? How are you feeling? Because you sound terrible.
Yeah, I'm getting there. I think my voice is a little bit better than last week.
You definitely sound better.
But at least I can talk and people can hear me beyond, you know, like pets and stuff like that. Because it was a little rough last week, have to say.
My dog is just squirming upstairs with you, how high your voice is right now. Now, a couple listeners texting into the show. Is Scotty all right? My buddy Matt texts in. He's like, that didn't even sound like Scott. Who is that guy? It's like, I swear it's Scott. He's just in Ireland. He hasn't been. I mean, it was 1 a.m.
Yeah, it was.
You had been. Doing things, drinking, golfing. You've been up for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I've been awake. I was at a dinner. The problem was, as we talked about on the podcast, we don't have to talk about it over and over again, but I was feeling a little bit sick. I had a little bit of a sinus infection, and then my ears were plugged, so I was talking louder than normal, and then we were in a couple of rooms that were, like, super loud, and, like, I'm talking and talking and talking, and you know what? You guys got me actually at a good point, because by the next day, I went to, like, say a few things and nothing came out.
So sound like the Godfather?
It was, yeah, pretty much. It was not good. It didn't feel good.
How far to the flag?
And we were playing golf and it was in the pouring rain and the whole deal the next day. I mean, not that you guys are going to feel any sympathy for me, you know, but I powered through it. But yeah, it wasn't the best for a podcast.
I powered through a round at where were you that day?
Royal County Down.
Royal County Down. Oh, I powered through. It was really hard. Let's talk about the trip, though, Scotty. You started there at Royal County Down, and from pictures, the course looked beautiful, but it looked horrible outside, pouring rain. Good thing you brought two layers of rain gear.
Yeah, needed it the first day. Right after I talked to you guys, it started raining that night. Went for about 12 hours. It just kept coming down. We actually didn't know if we were going to get out on the golf course at Royal County Down. And, you know, it's really odd for a links course to, you know, they drain very well. Mm-hmm. It's all sand. For them to consider not opening. And we ended up with a 2-hour delay sitting in the clubhouse, you know, wondering if we were actually going to get to play. Kind of disappointed if we weren't going to get out there. And eventually they relented and sent us out in some horrific conditions. It wasn't too bad for the first few holes. We thought, oh, this is good. We're going to get a few pictures. We should be okay. But pretty soon we couldn't see the mountains nearby. Next thing you know, we couldn't see the dunes surrounding the holes. And then next thing you know, our heads were straight down, looking down to the ground. And we were just kind of fighting to finish as the winds lashed us off the Irish Sea. And yeah, we were wet. I mean, it was so wet that I was telling you guys, one of the golf towels that I had just dried out from last Tuesday. So, I mean, it was something. Not that I wouldn't do it again. How's that?
No. So what'd you fire? You going to give a score of the first day?
I birdied the first hole.
It's always given us.
No score?
And then it kind of went downward.
Went sideways like the rain?
Well, you know what? I said when we got done, I called it miserable fun. How's that? Okay. So we had a good time. Yeah. I will say I did lose a couple of balls, which is not hard to do at Royal County Down. There are some really, really difficult holes, but I was happy with how I played, hit some good shots, played some holes really well, but it was really just a fight to get through it. I mean, any ball that went in the rough, it was like the heather and stuff. I actually tweaked my wrist like the first thing. I tried to hit a ball out of the rough. The ball went maybe 40 yards, and it just kind of had this sick topple down the fairway, and that's about it. And then woke up the next day and my arm and wrist hurt pretty good, but I wasn't that bad. I would, conservatively, I would probably say I ended that round probably about 8 over or 9 over or something like that,
which you probably would have signed up for.
Teeing off in those conditions, and literally that first hole, the one I said I birdied, it was a par 5 that's it played like 525 or something like that. It was playing downwind, and I hit like a 3 wood and a 6 iron. So it was, and that was when the wind wasn't coming up. Mm-hmm. So later on, when the wind started to really come up, I know we came around at one point and we had a par 3 that was like 130, and I was literally sitting there between a 6 and a 7 iron going, I don't know if these are enough to get there.
Hit driver 10
yeah.
yards short.
And they had actually, because of the wet conditions, the greenskeepers had actually moved the pins to some of the high points on the greens. Unfortunately, some of the high points in the greens were like the very back where there's lots of runoffs and stuff like that. So it wasn't set up real easy, that's for sure. Although I'm sure, that golf.
I doubt there is an easy setup.
But
you got the true links experience.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a glorious golf course. It'll definitely beat you up. It's the immense test that everybody says it is. Unfortunately, we didn't have it in its full glory. The gorse was out, which blooms bright yellow, and the sun wasn't out enough to really kind of catch all that. So we got a few pictures and things, but I certainly would love to go back for another shot at it, just from a visual standpoint, and just to be able to stand on 2 feet while we're swinging and not have to worry about rain pouring down your rain pants or getting in the top of your shoes or working your way through 5 gloves as you played the round.
So where'd you go from there? Next course on the list.
Well, we stayed there at the Slieve Donard in Newcastle, which is one of the hotels owned by the Hastings group, and which was fantastic. We would have loved to kind of hang out there more. And then our next course that we played from there, I'm trying to think where we went. I mean, it's a little blurry. We were heading to Ardglass from there, which is a popular golf course for a lot of people. It's become more popular. It had a really cool clubhouse. The clubhouse, I think I sent you a picture of that we had sun out. That was with the Guinness.
Mm-hmm. That was a nice picture.
Yeah. That clubhouse was actually built in 1405. It's actually like a former castle.
Oh, you share the same birthday. Age,
yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. So that's my boyhood home, actually.
Still standing after all these years.
Hard to believe. But they're, they're super receptive. They actually have a Canadian flag flying there, which is kind of neat. Kind of a different golf course. It's not traditional links. It kind of works its way up the cliffside. Lots of big rocks. You do not want to go left on that golf course, because left in most cases is basically the ocean, and that's about it. Some great views there. Some fun holes. They have basically goes around the sort of the peninsula. There's some holes sort of on the interior. They weren't as spectacular. A little bit more room than County Down, so you could certainly spray it a little bit more. Played really well there, actually. Save for a couple of gnarly lies on the backside and one Australian guy trying to kill us on the one tee box, because he didn't think he was going to reach us, but he yelled 4 or 5 minutes after we got there, so that was okay. But it's a guy we know, so that was all right. And Ardglass was a pretty good golf course, and I know it's popular and it's gaining more popularity with a lot of travelers. They had said there, the pro, that there had been a number of Canadians there that day as well. So.
Looks stunning. Absolutely beautiful. Like,
you're looking it up right now.
I'm looking it up. I'm just pretending I was there. Never got an invite. Still waiting for that. And then where'd you head from there, Scotty?
Well, that's when we, I guess, had our real treat, which was to head to Royal Portrush, which
not a big deal or anything.
No, which is obviously, hey, I brought you back a bag tag.
Oh yeah, we got beautiful bag tags here from Royal Portrush. That's going on my bag. I'm going to tell people this is from when I didn't get invited to a trip to Northern Ireland. But obviously, Royal Portrush is home to the Open this year.
Yeah, they're well on their way for their setup there. I mean, all the grandstands were up, which is, kind of unique when you're teeing off. And, they're building one grandstand behind us, but they have a massive amount of grandstands behind 18.
I was going to say, what was that experience like walking up that 18th fairway? And you can just imagine what it would be like walking up Sunday with, the Open on the line, everyone cheering for you.
Yeah, it's funny how small it makes the golf course look when you have those stands up there. I think the final whole grandstand hosts about 4,000 people or so. So it's kind of neat to see this little, you know, mini hockey rink basically set up behind the 18th. It was kind of surreal, actually. And there was other, you know, tourists that had stopped there. They were kind of walked out to watch people come in and play.
Just having a look.
Yeah, just having a look. And it doesn't make you nervous or anything, but it's just, it's kind of a neat environment to have there. And we had them behind one as well. We played the first hole, and they're getting ready to do the corporate tents on the right side of one, which unfortunately I flamed my opening tee shot into that. But thankfully, it was a free drop from there. So that's all good. But it definitely looks different when the grandstands are up and plays a little bit differently as far as, you know, the leaderboards are up there. They mm-hmm. didn't have facings on them. But, you know, everywhere you look, you can sort of envision what it's going to feel like when the Open is there. And they're expecting 214,000 people that week, which is insane when you think about it. And
considering how small that little town is that it's built on.
Yeah, it's only 7,500 people. So it's going to be a bit of a traffic nightmare.
Wasn't it you that said something about a mansion, a small mansion yeah. going for like $250,000 for the week?
Yeah, we were talking to a number of locals about...
I'm going to go buy a house.
That's
then.
Insane.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you could go and build something.
They need to have the U.S. Open at Amherstview. I'll rent my house.
Yeah. Well, one of the drivers that we had was mentioning that his buddy was renting his house just down the way in another town called Ballycastle for about $12,000. I think it was only like a two-bedroom house. The media hotel, I think, goes for $500-something a night if you can get a spot. And then
did you get us a spot?
No, I didn't. Another friend there, John McCartney from the Toronto Sun, managed to get an Airbnb that he was sweating over getting, and it was a one-bedroom cottage, and he got it. It's a mile from the course, and I think he got it for like $320 or $330 a night. So that's a big deal. So.
Euros.
That was actually Canadian dollars, okay. Believe it or not, converted. So he was ecstatic getting a deal that way. One guy mentioned he had an offer of $85,000 for his house for the week, but
he's holding out.
Well, I think he's a lawyer. They were mentioning he's kind of not far from the golf course, and you know he'd already scheduled to have a whole bunch of friends and things come into town, people to come into town, family, and
I'd be canceling that.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
I like $85,000
yeah.
more.
Yeah,
but rent your house, get a hotel room for him.
Well, you can't find a hotel room. They're impossible. I mean, there's a Royal Court Hotel, which is
on the rent an RV for tenant part of your driveway.
I haven't heard yet. I expect they will have some camping because I know they've done that at a couple of the other opens. But this other driver was telling us about this mansion. We went by it and it was in behind the stone wall. And he said, I think it was a Japanese television broadcast network that had rented it for $250,000. Which is
people are fired up for this crazy. Open.
That's insane.
So should they be fired up based on the course, though?
Know, they really should. I mean, it's a lot of fun. Tristan Mullally, who's the...
It's like right in the mountains, too. Just beautiful views.
Yeah, it's great views to the ocean right there. Tristan Mullally was saying the women's national team coach for Canada, who's originally from Ireland. He grew up at Port Rush. He was an assistant pro there, I believe. And he said if there's one place he could just play for the rest of his life, it would be that golf course. And I don't blame them. They've built a couple of new holes for the Open, and I think a lot of people will see those holes on TV, which are the 7th and 8th. And the 7th is a 590 yard par 5 that's tucked in behind the dunes, and when I say dunes I mean 60-70 foot high dunes. So it will be getting a lot of TV time during the Open. It's just a fun golf course, really well conditioned. It's going to be a neat finish. 16 is a hole called Calamity, which I think is going to play probably 230 yards, par 3 from the back. And you got to kind of go over this canyon area. And then 17 is a par 4 that if you get it to the top of the hill, it can actually almost run down to the green. You can almost drive it. We were playing one tee forward and I hit 3-wood off the tee and I couldn't add more than 20 yards left into the green.
So that's going to add some...
Some drama. Yeah, some drama. Yeah.
I can't wait.
So a lot could happen right at the end, and I think if you see how the Irish people have embraced it as well, Johnny Cole Hamilton, who's the executive director of championships for the RNA, was there doing a presentation, as was Martin Ebert, who's the consulting course architect. And Johnny Cole Hamilton said 74% of the tickets, and of course they're all sold out, as we've mentioned previously, and they sold extra as well. 74% of the tickets sold are to people from Ireland. So they're going to have a lot of local support for it. There's a lot of people really excited about it, including Graham McDowell's brother, who is there, by the way.
Were you drinking with him?
No, the group behind us actually ran into him. He works, he's a greenkeeper and works at Royal Portrush. So this is Gary McDowell.
Graham's gonna have some reads. He's gonna be right in the mix.
I mean, he hasn't qualified yet, unfortunately. Yeah. So he's pretty close. Obviously, he got a win, which helps get him up there, and then he's working towards that. And you know, he'll be well received, as is Rory, who's down the road.
Rory's not far from Hollywood there.
No, and Rory is definitely the even though it's Portrush and Graham is the native son, Rory seems to be a little bit more popular, I guess. A lot of the people in Northern Ireland they're not really fond of Graham's more Americanized accent, I guess, which was mentioned to us a couple times. He's a beloved son, but they think of him a little bit too American. He's a little too American right now. So
Sorry, Graham, might want to work on that, I guess. But let's talk about Rory a little bit, moving on to the PGA Tour from last weekend.
We don't want to get to my last course.
You had one more?
We had one more.
This guy, again.
Way to go, Stefan. I thought you knew his schedule.
Well, I was trying to ignore him. I couldn't read his text. It was all gibberish. Just pictures of Guinness and whiskey. I don't know. One more on top. Where else did you go from there?
We went to Port Stewart from there, which was it was kind of a late addition. A very spectacular golf course built in the dunes. The front nine is unbelievable. Good friend Tony Harris, who's a golf artist who we'll have on the podcast at some time, just loves this place. Just visually, it's amazing. Like the dunes that we saw at Portrush, you know, along that one hole, this whole front nine all plays through the dunes, these 60, 70 foot high dunes. So, it's pretty neat. And then the back nine's a little bit calmer, but we played in some winds that were getting close to 60K, with the wind just kind of coming off the North Sea. And it was a tough challenge.
Sounds like there was a ton of crazy weather.
Well, you know what? There's always going to be some weather there. I mean, you are on the ocean for all these, so you expect that there's going to be some wind, but you really have to, you have to learn how to play it. And even there, I remember the 18th hole we got there, and I had managed to look when we were at the first tee towards 18, and I could see that the fairway actually went downhill to the green. So realized pretty quickly that you could land the ball, or you should land the ball, kind of 20 yards short of the green, and the ball would kick up, which thankfully worked out, because when I got up there, I think I had 188 left into this par 4, which was, 470 off the back tees, and I thought I'd pummeled it off the tee. And then when I figured it out, I figured, I had to carry the ball basically 170 yards, and I had to hit my 205 club to hit it 170 yards. Just because of the wind. So, I didn't play as many bunkers as I thought I would, but it was good fun, and the people were amazing. Couldn't have asked for better hosts. At every club, we were received very warmly, and the people of Northern Ireland seemed to love Canadians.
Everyone goes to Ireland. I love Northern Ireland. Everyone that goes to Ireland, they go to Dublin. And I visited Ireland. I was like, no.
When were you there?
Just last summer, 2018. Okay. And Belfast was easily one of my favorite cities. And I highly recommend it. I think people forget. And clearly there's some great golf around there. And, they say Rory's one of their own in Belfast. He's just 20 minutes down the road in Hollywood. And definitely hit up Belfast. A lot of great history and clearly a lot of great golf if you're heading that area.
Yeah, Belfast, very interesting city. Not super big. I guess the official population is about 380, I guess they were telling us. But it's about 500,000, let's say. You can go for, a good stroll around there. There's lots of pubs, as we talked about. Some amazing hotels. We stayed at a new hotel called the Grand Central right in the middle of town.
Well, they're actually the most bombed hotel in the world. The Europa. Right in Belfast.
The Europa, which
and
is...
And people still stay there and, like...
the most bombed?
Most bombed
hotel. Yeah, unfortunately, during the Troubles, it was, I believe, bombed 33 times. And even the Opera House, which is next door, was damaged by bombs a couple times. So Hastings Hotels, who owns the Slieve Donard, where we had stayed, they also own the Grand Central, and the Europa is as well. The Europa is famous. Bill Clinton stayed there. Lots of, you know, lots of celebrities and things have stayed there at the Europa. And so it's, yeah, unfortunately, that's part of its reputation is what it's known for. But there's about 10 new hotels downtown in Belfast that have been built in the last little while. Their tourism is
a little bit of a Tim Hortons down there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, there's a Tim Hortons. You guys saw the picture of that.
No, I saw the Tim Hortons.
A piece of home.
Well, it was kind of odd because I went for a walk. I knew it was there because someone had said, oh, yeah, there's a Tim Hortons in Belfast. There's one in Dublin. There's one.
They're all over.
Yeah, they're really all over. The only thing that was sort of disappointing was, you know, they drink their coffee with milk there, not cream. Milk.
Everyone knows you've got to drink it black. Yeah,
I know. So
black's the only way to go with coffee.
Well, see, everybody's got a preference that way, but it seemed pretty obvious. There, you know, I think 6 of the 8 people that were in the coffee shop in Tim Hortons when I was there were Canadians, and they didn't seem all that excited the fact that they had to deal with cream. So or no cream. Sorry,
you guys can get.
They had no cream at all.
I didn't see it. It wasn't available.
Nick was falling asleep. You bring up cream, and here he comes. This is the coffee
podcast. I drink coffee all day. I need cream in my coffee.
You know, I'd already had a coffee. I grabbed a coffee. And it was like 10 to 6
this
in the morning.
Great radio.
I know. It was, you know, but that's part of Belfast, right?
Yeah.
So, anyways, the point is, in the end, you know, as you know.
Amazing city.
Great town, amazing city. Good golf not far away, great golf not far away, lots of fun elements that you can put in there, whether it's pubs, restaurants, entertainment, you name it, they've got it, and certainly I'd go back.
Good for a boys trip, good for a family's trip. Sure. You'd recommend heading around there for anybody.
Yeah, I mean, diehard golfers are going to have a great time. I mean, you know, if you're going to take on the courses that we did, short of our glass, which is a little bit more forgiving, if you're going to take on the other ones, definitely bring a few extra golf balls. Probably move forward, which we had a couple guys that were with us that, you know, made a wise decision to sort of move forward and not have to deal with the heavy bits of gorse and, you know, the rough is not crazy. It's, you know, it'll thin out a little bit more towards the summertime. But yeah, bring a few extra golf balls and then, you know, just maybe play matches and not have high expectations to count every stroke as far as...
Just have fun.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Just enjoy yourself.
No, I saw a great quote the other day. Actually, it said, you know, when you're talking about moving forward, it's like, you know, play the forward tees. And if we're making too many birdies and we're having too much fun, we can always move back.
that is a great quote, if you think about that.
Because I went out the other day and my buddy's like, oh, let's go play the tips. Yeah. And it's... You know, golf courses have just opened up here. They're soaked. I don't mind playing the tips. It's a different look at your home course, whatever. I'll play any tee. But that's what I said. I was like, you know, if we're making a lot of birdies and you like, this is too easy, then we'll move back. And neither one of us even scratched breaking 80. That's how soaked and hard it was. It was a little bit windy. It's like, it's the start of the season. Let's just go have some fun. Do that for tournament play, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, that's one of the great things they do in the UK is they normally don't have the back tees open. Normally you have to play the member tees unless they have a medal competition going on where they might move back. But generally, any of the golf courses. So, you know, don't expect to sit there and go to Royal Port Rush and play it at 7,200 yards. You're not going to be allowed to do it.
Why would you want to? But I went on every single one of these websites that you mentioned here.
Yep.
Each one actually has almost set rules of which tee block you're going to play anyway based on your handicap. And most of the time, you're actually more forward than you would be up here. Obviously, wind and different conditions come into play, but you know, play at the tee block that you're gonna have fun on. Who cares what color it is? Just go out, have fun.
And yeah, and I didn't hit a lot of drivers there. I hit a lot of three woods because the ball's bouncing, and even though it was wet, you know, you've got links turf, so you know, shots that would normally go, you know, 260, 265 over here would sometimes run out 310 if you were in the right conditions.
I might be able to hit 300 over there.
Now, Royal County Down they have a number of blind tee shots, so I'd definitely recommend, you know, take a caddy there. Otherwise, you can get there on a tee box and have no idea where you're going. And thankfully, a couple guys in our groups, you know, did have caddies, so they were able to point out. So we didn't just sort of aim for the ocean or something by accident, which could have easily happened, believe me, especially with the rain and wind.
Well, speaking of golf travels, we have a great guest on the podcast today that basically specializes in this, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, TJ Rule from Golf Away Tour is going to join us. And TJ, we tried to maybe record a podcast. He was over in Northern Ireland when I was. They had a number of tour operators that was there.
That's okay. I say a lot of dumb things on here, too.
They had a number of tour operators that were there, and TJ was part of that group. And, you know, he's a guy that I've known from when he was at Queen's University here in Kingston. And he's been gracious enough to sort of, you know, have a little conversation about golf travel and really give us some of his wisdom about planning trips and some of his favorite destinations. And I think it'll be a very interesting chat.
Yeah, we'll get to TJ in a bit. Moving back over to the PGA Tour, we talked a lot about Rory the last little bit there. Rory was in contention on Sunday at Quail Hollow, ended up pulling a Rory this year. The Sunday scaries with Rory McIlroy continue to happen as he goes out and shoots 73, two over, ends up losing by, I believe, six, if I'm not mistaken. No, actually more, because he was minus nine, ended up losing by a bunch.
Yeah, he wasn't a factor in the
end. No, was not a factor in the end. And Max Homa, as I mentioned off the top, picks up his first career victory. It tends to happen at Quail Hollow, as we mentioned. Rory McIlroy, his first ever win was at Quail Hollow. Ricky Fowler's first ever win was at Quail Hollow, so a lot of guys tend to pick up their first win here, and good on Max for picking up his first win on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I mean, it's a guy who's made, I think, 67 starts, something like that, but a couple years ago, I mean, this is his third knock at the Tour, and a couple years back, I think he made two cuts in 17 events, and he won more money I think he won $1.422 million, and that's about $450,000 more than he made in his previous 67 starts.
Yeah, so this is a guy that is another one of those feast or famines early that's just trying to still find his feet around the PGA Tour. He has 16 starts this year, 8 missed cuts, 8 made cuts, 1 top 10, which was his win. Oh, sorry, 2 top 10s, 1 being a win. He actually just missed the cut last week at the Zurich.
Yeah, I think his other top 10 was a Bay Hill, I believe.
AT&T.
Our
favorite tournament, the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, the one I just absolutely love with Bill Murray doing snow angels in the bunkers, but we don't have to get back into that. But yeah, like, this guy's just feast or famine, as I said out there, picks up his first win. But a lot of great guys in the field. Jason Duffner was back. This is a guy that seems to have figured something out, still cannot putt within 10 feet. He's like shaking over these putts within 10 feet. I read that he's switched to his sixth putter this year and his fifth caddy this year.
That's crazy.
Which is insane. Yeah. Out on the PGA Tour, he's changed his clubs. He's rocking a Cobra driver. He was Titleist forever and he's gone back and forth. This guy's doing anything to figure it out. And this is his first win, finish this year above 60. So Jason's struggling, but it's nice to see him back.
It is. I mean, anytime Duff Daddy's around, I think the fans are happy with that. But
I'm going to call another boost on our part. We brought him up, and here he is again. It's a thing. It's a thing. PGA Tour players.
I think he needs to do a little bit more, though. I mean, that's got to be painful for a guy who's a major champion, you know, to go through that. I guess it's painful for any golfer, but, you know, for him to be searching around like that is mentally has got to be hard on him, that's for sure.
I mean, he's so chill anyway. I think he's probably fine. He's almost at the point. I had this one buddy that was just one summer, was just struggling all year. And he's a pretty good golfer, like generally mid 80s, but all year, like, this guy couldn't scratch break a 90. And we're on, I think it's, let's say it was like the 12th hole. And he stands over the tee block and he just crushes one into the woods. And all I hear is under his breath, he goes, "If I just break all my clubs, I will never have to golf again."
if only it was so easy.
Yeah,
right?
And it just like
pure frustration.
Yeah, just yeah. And then that's my buddy John, and then just that's how frustrated he was. And then the following year, we go to play our first round of the year, and I hadn't played too much end of the year with him, and he goes to grab his pitching wedge on the first hole, and it's two shot, like, it's in half.
Wow.
He's like, "Oh, I forgot about that part." But I feel like that's where Jason's at right now, where it's like he's trying anything to fix it, where I think my buddy here, he was just trying to get away from the golf course.
I just don't think I'm going to pick Jason Duffner for Bethpage. How's
no,
that?
I don't think that's a great spot for him. He's not that long, and right now he's not hitting that straight. You got to know how to putt at Bethpage.
Yeah, that's going to be very important, and the field's super strong. I just saw for Beth Page, they've got the top 102 players from the official world golf rankings are in the field already. So
it's going to be fun. I can't wait. I'm two weeks away.
Yeah, which means there's a tournament in between that's going to be forgotten by most people, unfortunately.
You don't even know what it is. No, I have no idea.
Byron Nelson is up this week.
Oh, yes. Well, of course. How did I forget that? I apologize to the late, great Byron Nelson. But, yeah.
Unfortunately, it's going to fall in the gap between this, you know, obviously the event this week and the PGA. So, you know, you're not getting the biggest field possible. You've got Koepka, Spieth, Reed, Stenson in the field. Tony Romo's in the field.
Pardon?
Tony Romo? Yeah, anyways. Luke Donald, Ernie, Padraig. That's about it. You know, Snedeker was in the field. He withdrew. So, yeah. Unfortunately, Trinity Force.
You know what?
Great golf course.
I'm going to give them another AT&T tournament.
I know. That's the problem with you.
Just to start here. I'm going to give them credit because you mentioned Tony Romo was in the field.
Yeah.
I will actually watch this tournament because I know he's a good player, but I might actually watch just to see what he does out there. He's not playing the weekend, I'll tell you that much, for free.
No.
But why not? That's one of those guys where trying to get.
Local guy. Had a little win with Austin Conley. They won the West Texas Pro-Am or something a couple weeks ago with, you know, so, yeah, whatever. Anyways, yeah, that's about all they've got going for them, unfortunately. Aaron Weiss is defending. He's 23 under last year. Didn't really get the wind out there at Trinity Forest, which is a really unique golf course. Treeless used to be a landfill, but it's unfortunately I feel bad for the Byron Nelson Championship. It is certainly tucked into a spot where it's not going to have a lot of great players that are there. A lot of people are really anticipating the PGA and even next week I'm sure a lot of people will be talking, or this week more people will be talking probably about the PGA than they will be about the Byron Nelson.
Well, one guy I'm looking forward to seeing at the PGA Championship that's been on fire all year, and I'm a big fan of his ever since he was on the McKenzie Tour, Joel Damon.
Yeah.
Okay, he solo second best finish he's had in his career to this point. I don't even know if I told the story from back in the day when he came into Golf Town, and these are how dialed in these guys are. He comes in when the McKenzie Tour event was out here in Bath.
So that was the Great Waterway Classic.
Classic, yeah. So and
little,
he comes
a little different than the Wells Fargo Championship.
No, exactly. Right. At that point, he had already won three of the first five tournaments on the McKenzie Tour. He's locked in web.com status, and he comes in. He's like, I think my 4-iron is like half a degree upright. This is how good these guys are at holding club, half a degree upright.
Half a degree.
And I was like, he's like, can you fix it? And I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? But it's a ping, which ping, they're known to be rock hard.
Sure.
So I huff on this thing to bend it half a degree, and it goes 3 degrees flat.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like,
uh-oh.
Yeah, I'm sweating.
You're run out of the store.
I'm sweating. I look at him, and I just like look at him. I'm just like, I'm just a bit off. I'm just going to just gonna fix it.
I'm going to adjust.
At that point, I was praying to any God that was listening, and I'm just like, please, oh God, please, please fix it. And I crank on this thing, and I'm cranking on it, as I said, because 3 degrees on a ping is...
Yeah.
I never had that much muscle in my body. And I just crank on it, gets perfect there, and I hand it back to him. He's like, oh, thanks, man. I only have to use it on every single par three this week, so hopefully it's right.
Whoops.
Whoops, yeah.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, and, awesome guy.
He works with John Graham down in Rochester, his putting coach, and John's got a lot of great things to say about him. So that was kind of exciting to watch him getting contention. Unfortunately, he was tied for the lead there for a while, and I thought, all right, you know, he might make this happen. And he's a little bit of an honorary Canadian as well. I think we mentioned that on the show before.
Feel that.
Yeah, he's definitely popular. And when Corey Connors was winning at the Valero, he was one of the guys beside the green waiting for Corey to get off there. He was watching. So,
but give Max credit. He walked away with it at 15 under par, and Joel finished at minus 12, and congratulations on your first win. You know, we didn't talk about him to get the boost, but you know, we talked about Joel enough, so we'll call it a little bit of a boost.
Sounds good.
One person we love talking about on here set a course record this weekend. Ryan O'Toole out on the LPGA. Ryan DeVoe is her caddy. He was our first guest on the podcast.
Yeah.
Told some amazing stories. Go back to episode one and have a lot of laughs because Ryan's hilarious. But they went out and set the course record at Meadowhall Championship. Did I get that right?
Yeah, you did.
I got that right. Yeah, 65. Right. They ended up finishing T12 with Siyoung Kim picking up the win. But awesome to see Ryan pick up her best finish this year so far.
Yeah, I mean, she's been playing well. It's just a matter of kind of putting it together. The only bad part now is they've got a couple weeks off. So
yeah, they got, 4 weeks off on the LPGA? 3 weeks off on the LPGA?
She's going to take that many off, but it's just a couple now that they have off until they head into Kingsmill is the next event, which is where we'll see a bunch of players come back. But I think she's taking a little bit of a break because I think, as we know, DeVoe has mentioned he's taken, I think, four weeks off.
He'll be back here. We'll run into him at
no doubt.
He's coming back after 4 months on the road.
We might have to drag him back. Hey, that might be a good choice. Might we can drag him back in.
Maybe we'll bring him back in, get a little update. Maybe get some stories of Window Above Me and all the boys he hangs out with.
You got to be Window Below Me this time.
Yeah, who knows?
Oh, hey, maybe there's a couple other local guys, or at least one that's a solid caddy. Yeah, maybe we can get him dragged
double up.
In as well.
We'll get a couple of them in here, and we'll chat with
there
them.
You go.
But yeah, great week for Ryan. Congratulations to Siyoung Kim. Here's the problem I had with Siyoung Kim, though. So slow. So slow. I watched her stand over her golf ball, step back, ask her caddy for the number. The caddy gives her number. She goes to the golf ball. She steps back, switches her club, reads her thing again. And like, I can't watch this anymore. Just show me the person in last place chipping on the green or something. I mean, she's a great golfer, but it was so painfully slow. And that's something I loved watching Ryan when she was on there. It was like, what's the number? All right, you think this is enough? And Ryan, you know, Des like, yeah, that's the number. Go for it. She hits it up there. Great shot. Away they go. And like, that's how golf should be played. I'm sick of these long waits. Yeah. Like it felt like 3 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you on that. I love when people just kind of get on with it. I mentioned some of the people I was traveling with, a couple of the Australian guys, and you know, we talked about speed of play. We were talking about Aaron Baddeley and, you know, sort of his putting routine and how quick it is. And we did have a couple of slow guys in front of us at a couple times, and it didn't make it all that enjoyable to watch people sort of, and you know what, it can't be fun for them as well. I mean, you sit there and watch a foursome, and you know, they can move ahead to their golf ball, but the four of them sort of stay, you know, stand around, you know, watching each other hit golf balls. I'm not saying it has to be a race, you know, enjoy yourself out there. But you know, as we've talked about in the past, there's certainly some ways that you can move along, and especially on the tour as well. It's not going to be very appealing to spectators if they have to watch that on TV just over and over again, especially fans that are used to watching, you know, action sports. You know, if there's no action, then, you know, you want to move on, right?
Absolutely.
This is a great time to get to our interview with TJ Rule from Golf Away Tours. He joined us for a nice conversation about golf travel. He's traveled to a lot of countries around the world, and we certainly look forward to his insight. And I think you'll enjoy this conversation with TJ Rule of Golf Away Tours. All right, welcome to the show, TJ Rule of Golf Away Tours. TJ, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great, Scott. How you doing?
I'm doing great. You were in Northern Ireland when I was. Had quite the trip there, my friend. But unfortunately, you didn't get to play all the golf.
Wow, rubbing it in early.
I know, right?
Yeah, which is unfortunate.
It still hurts.
I felt really bad for you because, you know, obviously you wanted to play, but I know you did shoot 75 or so at Royal County Down in good weather, right?
Luckily, I got that round in anyway before I got a little bit injured. But was fun.
Why don't we sort of give yourself a little bit of an introduction? Why don't you tell us a little bit about your company and how you got into the travel industry?
Sure. So Golf Away Tours, we're a small boutique, bespoke golf travel company. So we do golf travel to all destinations around the world, all the best golf courses and golf resorts around the world. The majority of our business is to Ireland and Scotland, or the UK, if you will. We do some to England and Wales as well. So that is the most popular destination for Canadians to go on a great holiday. But we do, you know, trips all around the world, to whether it's Australia, New Zealand, or obviously the big resorts around the US, Caribbean, South Africa, just anywhere anybody wants to go. So yeah, it's a fun business. Got into it about 6 years ago, and it was kind of fell into it, I guess, a little bit. A friend of mine, Matt McKay, who you know, he and I played golf at university together, had spoken about doing travel, you know, over the years after university. you know, kind of pie in the sky ideas, but both of us decided to look into it at some point, and kind of all the ducks lined up, and we found a gentleman who was ready to retire, and so we decided to take over his business or offer that to him, and it all worked out. So 6 years later, unfortunately, Matt's moved on to something else, but I'm still going strong and enjoying every minute of it.
So you've been doing this for 6 years. You obviously know what you're doing. What makes a perfect buddy's trip in your eyes?
Good company.
Do you know one?
That's where it starts. Yeah. No,
I think he means people, not the ocean.
Yeah, good friends. You know, obviously, a lot of it is the people you're with. But, you know, when people come to us with a group of guys that they know they're going to enjoy spending a week or 10 days with, and, you know, picking the best destination somewhere that, you know, is going to, you know, tick all the boxes, great golf courses and great, you know, great hotels, great nightlife. And, you know, it's going to, everybody's going to have a great time. So that's obviously important, and it's tough to satisfy everybody. But usually when we have groups coming to us, they have an idea where they want to go. And we just help them sort that out.
How do you go about, you know, getting, I guess, familiar with the destinations? How much travel for golf had you done before you got into the business? And then how much have you had to do personally to sort of seek out information on the destinations and sort of assure yourself that, you know, they're perfect for your clients?
Well, that is the tough part of the job, as you know, Scott. But I suffered through it for the first few years and continue to suffer through it as I did last week, you know, as when we were there. People don't understand. We have to play sometimes in the rain, right? I mean, it's tough. It's tough.
No.
These guys are not crying here, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's funny how nobody ever feels bad for me. No, quite honestly, you know, I have traveled quite a bit. I had traveled before getting into the business for golf a fair bit, but obviously quite a bit more since getting into the business. And in the first few years when we were just getting started and weren't all that busy booking trips yet, that was when we took the time to go and do a lot of research. And it's important. It's very important. And so we knew that. And I want to know what I'm talking about when I talk to somebody. I want to know I can describe all the golf courses for one thing, but also the hotels they're going to be staying at, you know, the pubs they're going to be drinking at. I mean, it's all important, because if you can't speak from experience, then you're just, you know, looking up something on the website that they can do on their own. And so, you know, I have over the last number of years taking the opportunities to go over when I can and see the destinations, meet the people that you're dealing with, so that also when people are, you know, on the trip and you know, and they need some help on the ground, or you know, there are issues, then we have people there that can help us out, because we know them, we've met them, and you know, and we know the destination. So it's vitally important. And so I really have taken the time over the last few years to do that. And hey, it's a fun part of the job.
I mean, how often do you, you know, I guess run into some things that maybe you don't want to see on those trips, where you, you know, maybe they've made themselves out to be something, but you know, when you get there, you find out it's something else that, you know, it's not something that you want your clients to be part of.
Yeah, not often, to be honest. And luckily, you know, on our trips that we've organized, you know, knock on wood, you know, there haven't really been any issues. And so, and that's a good thing, because, you know, knowing the destination. But in terms of going over and seeing the destinations ourselves, and, you know, there are certain times where you'll see something, you know, whether it be a hotel or a golf course that you know that your clients aren't going to be that crazy about. It's not going to be at the top of their list. And it's you might have a client say, oh, I heard this great thing about this hotel. And if you can speak honestly about it and even tell them that I don't think it's for you guys, I think that goes a long way. So, it doesn't happen very often, Scott, but, you know, there are times where, you know, it's something that's not going to necessarily fit.
So you're helping plan a group. It's their first trip. They don't know where to go right now. What are you most recommending? Do you find lately?
In terms of a destination?
Yes.
Well, you know, I mean, Scotland and Ireland are our two biggest destinations, and, I always, you know, push people to go to those if they haven't been there, or even if they have. And we get the question all the time, you know, which one, Scotland or Ireland?
The ultimate question.
Flip a coin.
Yeah, the ultimate question. And what would you say, Scott?
Well, I'm a little biased because I have some Scottish heritage.
So
I'm a little biased towards Scotland, but Ireland is very spectacular. And it would definitely be flip a coin between those two.
Yeah, it is flip a coin. And to me, I always say that Scotland has the wild card in St. Andrews. That is a golfer's dream destination and a place that every golfer really should see at some point in their lifetime. Beyond that, I think if you took away St. Andrews, I would lean slightly towards Ireland, but that's just my personal preference. The golf in my mind is spectacular in both. All the links courses they have, and even some of the, parkland courses that, Canadians don't often go over and play are very good as well. I think the difference to me is really the people, and not that the Scots aren't good people, Scott. Sorry about that.
Yeah, sure.
Scots are great, and I have a great time when I go over there as well. But the Irish just want you to be there. They take such pride in hosting, and it really does make a difference. And so I think that people feel a little bit more welcome, especially at the golf courses. Some of the Scottish golf courses can be a little bit more uppity, and whereas the Irish golf courses, really, they do want you to be there, and that comes across. And so for that reason, I would lean slightly to Ireland. But those are the two destinations that I would recommend right off the top, because they're just, you can't go wrong. You're not going to, you're not going to guide anybody in the wrong direction. They're going to have a great time if they are true golfers.
When you're doing those trips, I mean, a lot of the people obviously want to play a lot of the golf courses that they're familiar with. How often do you sort of work in some different golf courses that you know they'll enjoy, but maybe aren't on their big list?
Yeah, it is important to know those courses and to recommend them, because, in certain areas, there are those big name courses, but there might not be enough courses to fill out a week or fill out an itinerary. So you need some other options. People don't often like to go over and play the same course over and over. They want to test out as many courses as possible. So, if people are going up to the north of Scotland, for example, most people have heard of Royal Dornoch. It's, ranked top 20 in the world. It's a spectacular links golf course, home of Donald Ross, and it's a place people really need to go see. But if you're up there, it's really kind of in the middle of nowhere, but there are some other great courses in the vicinity, like a Brora or a Tain or a Nairn, and those are courses that can really fill out an itinerary and aren't going to disappoint. And not only that, they also help the price point, because when you're talking playing all the top courses all the time, obviously some people don't want to spend that type of cash. And so sticking in some of those other courses can help out with the price as well.
So when you do your packages, I mean, are they mostly custom? You say you're, bespoke. Do you put together certain packages that are sort of stock things, or is it mostly just customized?
It's all customized. And, no two itineraries are alike. We certainly have similar itineraries, and for example, in Scotland there are sort of four main golf areas, so people would usually choose two of them, whether it be St. Andrews and East Lothian, or the north, like Dornoch and Aberdeen, or the southwest. People would really choose sort of two of those in a week to 10-day period. But the way that it works out, and a lot of it has to do with availability, obviously, the golf courses, what days of the week you can play. For example, at a Royal Troon, you can only play 3 days a week. At Muirfield, you can only play 2 days a week, whereas there are other courses you can play every day. So you always have to kind of work around the schedule based on, the dates that they have in mind. And so that's why no two trips are the same. We don't tell people, hey, go pick package B off our website and we'll book that for you. It's not quite that simple when you're going to Ireland and Scotland. And that's why it really takes an expert to coordinate all that stuff and make sure that, that you're not traveling too much, you're staying at the right hotels in the right places, and that there's availability at the golf course.
Let's talk about your, let's call them research trips. And obviously you go golfing, but I'm kind of interested in when you get off the beaten path, what does those late nights look like for you when you're finding the right restaurant or bar to go to? Can you even read the notes in the morning? You set yourself, like, what are these late night researches looking like for yourself?
Well, I mean, we basically just golf and eat an early dinner and go to bed,
because
we're very responsible that way. So get up, and we need to research the breakfast in the morning. That's the important part.
Of course.
Obviously, when you do guys trips, and the majority of our trips are buddies trips and guys trips, although, you know, couples trips and women's trips are certainly becoming more popular for us. But still the stock trip, I guess, if you will, is kind of 8 to 12 guys, you know, going and playing golf as much as possible and then finding the best drinking hole. And so to be able to, you know, give people an idea of where to go and what nights, you know, there'll be live music on and, you know, where the best crack is, as they say in Ireland, you know, you got to do the research. And so we work really hard at that.
I mean, you get places like the Bushmills Inn. I think you guys stayed there, right? We were having dinner there, but you guys stayed overnight.
We did stay there. Yeah. What a cool spot that is.
I guess those are the special spots that, you know, people can sort of have a little bit of everything, the dinner, the pub and the accommodations, right?
That's right. They have great food there and they have a really cool pub at the front, you know, with a little fireplace. And first time I was in there, I remember guys, we were just standing around and there wasn't any music being played, but all of a sudden a couple guys just started singing. And then, you know, a bunch of guys were singing and it was just, you know, it turned into, you know, there wasn't a band, but just music, right? And
hopefully it's just fun, right? Hopefully it wasn't the certain tour operator that sang Happy Birthday at the Sleeve Donard the other night.
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay, good. That'll be another story for another time, but yeah.
But yeah, so Bushmills is a really special place, and it's a place that we put a lot of people up in that area of the country in Northern Ireland, because it is a perfect spot for a golf group. You know, it's very close to the golf courses, and they have pretty good whiskey there.
We've mentioned a lot about Ireland. We've mentioned Scotland, but people forget, like, Canada is a golf destination for many as well. You guys have great recommendations on your website about places to go in Canada. Where in Ontario or Quebec, somewhere local to us, would you recommend for a good buddies trip?
Yeah, there's so many great places. And it's funny, the more I travel around the world doing what I do, the more I realize how spoiled we are where we live in terms of golf. The golf we have is underrated around the world. People just don't know. And it's because we don't advertise it, to be honest. And we don't really brag about it and we don't tell people about it. And a lot of our great golf is private golf, which I think hurts a little bit as well. But, you know, when you're talking buddy trips in this area, you know, going up even just into Muskoka, from, you know, from Toronto or Ottawa or Kingston, it's not that far to go, but there's so many great courses up there and some nice resorts and golf that you don't really find almost anywhere else in the world. It's just spectacular lakeland, rocky, you know, really, really picturesque golf. And especially if you go up in the fall, and if you're going into Quebec, as you mentioned, Mont Tremblant has some great golf as well. So we really are spoiled for options.
Yeah, I have a bachelor party coming up in Mont Tremblant. The bachelor wants to go golfing. Where should we send them?
Well, I mean, the Mont Tremblant courses the ones at the resort are very good. So you have the three courses there. I believe it's still three courses. I haven't been up there in a while, but and we don't tend to send a lot of people there, to be honest. We do a lot of international work, but the courses there, Le Diable, Le Géant, are very good courses, and you know, that I think they'd be the ones to play.
And there's always an area to get yourself into trouble in Mont Tremblant.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, you've obviously gone to a lot of these destinations. You have, like, you know, you mentioned Ireland being have an affinity to it, but I know we've talked a little bit about New Zealand and a couple of the courses there and some of them being among your favorites. Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the great golf courses in New Zealand that people can get to?
Yeah, what a great destination for golf as well, and obviously a long way to go for Canadians, but well worth the trip. And, you know, if you know golf, the world of golf, and you know, read up on it at all, you probably know a little bit about courses like Cape Kidnappers and Cowrie Cliffs, two courses that are both ranked in the top 100 in the world. Cape Kidnappers is one of the most spectacular settings for a golf course. It's set, I think it was 300 or 400 feet above the ocean. These little promontories of land that stick out, and these, you know, these holes that kind of stick out into the ocean and drop off on either side. It's just spectacular. And it's also, it's a Tom Doak design course. It's a very good golf course. Even the holes that aren't out over these cliffs, but spectacular. And when you go to New Zealand, there's more to it than just the golf as well. There's great wine and the people are fantastic and the scenery is unbelievable. So just driving around the islands is a great trip. The courses aren't all that close together. It's not a very big country, but the great course is it does take some moving around to get to them, but that moving around is really enjoyable. And so, there are so many great courses. The one that really jumps out as well is called Taraiti, which is fairly new golf course. And unfortunately, it is a private golf course, but they do allow some access to play. But you're talking, you know, having to spend a night at the resort and pay the hefty green fee. And, you know, it's in the range of $2,500 to $3,000 to play it once. So it is a hefty price tag.
You just popped our producer's eyeballs out, by the way.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I was there in November. And, let's just say I just walked around the golf course. I didn't tip it up. But unfortunately,
still cost you a grand.
Yeah. Wasn't quite in the budget, but what a spectacular property. And they are actually starting to build two other golf courses there. At least they're not building them yet, but they're in the works, and they will be public golf courses and should be, you know, equally spectacular.
I mean, just as an aside, you're on the you're a ranking panelist for Golf Digest. How do you blend in your work with seeing golf courses and doing the rankings?
Well, you know, golf obviously is a passion of mine, and golf architecture is a passion of mine. So for me, every time I play a golf course and go to do my research trips, I am really looking pretty closely at the golf course, and I am trying to study all the holes. And for some reason, like, I have a terrible memory sometimes, Tim, but
nice.
But for golf courses, for some reason, I can remember the holes, and it's just this weird skill that I have for visualizing holes. And so, and it's just because of the passion I have for golf course architecture. So when I'm playing a course, I really am looking at all those aspects and able to, you know, judge it based on the criteria of a Golf Digest while I'm playing it.
When we talk about trips, you mentioned Scotland previous. I know you've done some sweep and swing trips that involve curling as well. They're pretty unique. You obviously have some celebrities that are sort of involved with that. Why don't you give us a rundown on what those trips are about?
They're so much fun. So I started this a couple of years ago and decided, you know, it's something that's a little bit unique and nobody else would be doing it. And obviously in Canada, curling is a huge sport, and the home of curling and golf is Scotland. So why not try to set up a trip to Scotland where you play both of them? And so I met somebody over there who owns a rink and talked to him about setting it up. And then I got a couple people involved back here who I thought would, you know, great hosts for the trip. And so the first couple of trips I did with Cheryl Bernard, who, you know, won a silver medal for Canada in the 2010 Olympics, is on TSN now doing, you know, the play-by-play and color commentary for the curling, and is just an all-around great person. And she was a fantastic host, as was Brian Mudrick, who is a he's on TSN with her doing the curling broadcast.
Well, Brian's
he's
the also, voice of curling. He's been the voice of curling forever.
absolutely. He's a good friend and also just an awesome dude. And so the two of them were really, really good hosts. We did it 2 years in a row. So we spend, four nights in Carnoustie at the Carnoustie Golf Hotel overlooking the championship course at Carnoustie. And we play a couple of, we curl for a couple of days at a rink about 20 minutes away. We play a bit of golf in Carnoustie and then we head to St. Andrews for four nights. And, you know, the trip itself, you know, we've always had great people on it who just are passionate about curling but love golf as well. And it's really been successful. So this year we're running our third sweep and swing, and Cheryl and Brian have done their part for the 2 years. So we've moved on to other guests. And this year, proud to have Glenn Howard, who's, you know, one of the best curlers of all time, and John Morris, who's also a very accomplished curler and two-time gold medalist at the Olympics. And again, two very, very well respected and great guys in the world of curling. And so it's going to be a really fun trip. And we still have spaces available. So if people are interested, by all means, let us know. The trip's in October, middle of October. And it's just a really good time.
And where can people sign up if they want to hit the Sweep and Swing 2019?
Well, all the information is on our website, golfawaytours.com. And if people wanted to give me a shout, my email address is tj@golfawaytours.com. So you can get a hold of me there and get more information or get some information from the website and go from there.
All right, one last question for you. You mentioned some great destinations. Are there any emerging destinations that you think might be on people's radar in the next few years, maybe ones that you're looking at starting to set up some trips for?
There's so many great destinations in the world, and you know, whether it's emerging, I mean, places like a South Africa where you get amazing golf, but also like you get the safari adventure, and it's such a cool trip. So that's, you know, becoming more and more of a hot destination. And also Argentina. Argentina has some great golf, great wine. It's a really good destination. It's one for us, though, both of those, where you go in the winter and it's their summer. So you can kind of escape our winter, especially after this past cold one we just went through. And those are two great destinations that are, you know, they have been emerging for a little while, but they're two awesome golf destinations that people might not really, you know, think of as top of mind.
Perfect. Thanks, TJ. Really appreciate you coming on the show. It was great to see you in Northern Ireland. Take care of that back, and hopefully we cross paths again soon.
Hopefully. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Devin.
Thank you, TJ Rule from Golf Away Tours, for coming on the podcast. I'm excited. I need to plan a golf trip somewhere. Ireland is a good start. I obviously didn't get to play when I was over there, so I'm itching to go back.
Yeah, you know what? He sort of teases you, and you really, you know, once he starts mentioning all those different places, you definitely want to go and, you know, hop back on a plane and get rolling with the golf, right?
Ireland, Scotland, I don't care. I played the ladies' putting course at St. Andrews when I was there.
Nice. Who'd you beat?
I destroyed my wife.
Oh. The only person you can beat.
I think it was like, she was dormy after three. I don't even know if that's possible. That's how far behind
dormy
she was.
After three?
Yeah, three holes.
Wow, you're talented.
Yeah, I know. That's how good I am. No, it was a great time. But yeah, St. Andrews is a great place for that. But clearly all over Ireland's worth a trip for sure.
Definitely. I mean, you know, TJ's got lots of great insight, and he certainly stokes your fires to get out there and get playing some golf around the world.
Well, we're playing golf around here now. I mentioned that a couple of times. Courses are starting to open. Get me ready for the Canadian Open, though. That's not that far away. We're about a month away. A couple big names have committed to playing in that tournament. We got Brooks Koepka this week, just announced he will be playing. Bubba Watson will be coming back. His wife is Canadian, so he tends to play in this. But quite the field. This is quite the field that's being built at the Canadian Open.
Yeah, I don't think people will be too upset to see Brooks and Bubba added to, especially Brooks. I mean, this is a guy who's a three-time major winner. You know, plays a game that's just unbelievable to watch in person, and just to, you know, have that opportunity, I guess, to watch him hit it around to Hamilton with the likes of DJ and Rory also there, you know, those other guys that are super spectacular, along with, you know, the rest of Team RBC, I guess, even guys like Ryan Palmer, who just, you know, just had a win, but are Canadians as well. I mean, it's just a nice addition to the field, and they said there'll be some more players announced in the next little while. They still got a little bit of time to commit, but, you know, already it's a spectacular field, and ticket sales are going wild, as we've talked about in the past.
Sold out for Friday.
Yeah, Friday's already sold out, and inquiries are through the roof. So it should be a very special Open.
We're fired up. We're going to be there. We got some big announcements we'll
get to that. We're working on a few things.
We're working
right?
on a few things, yeah, for sure. And I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. Who knows? You never know. Tiger, maybe he sprinkles in there, you think?
I don't know if that's
Give me a percentage. Where's your head at?
Has he ever been there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Most famous Canadian Open shot ever from him at Glen Abbey.
Yeah. I don't really think it's going to happen based on, you know, how much he's reduced his schedule, but, you know, I'll still throw in 5%. How's that? You never know. It's better than nothing. It's better
than
nothing.
That is true. That would blow things through the roof. However, you know, with the Open the week after, I don't necessarily see Tiger doing that right now, especially considering he has to fly overseas, which he doesn't love to do anymore with his back. But hey, 5% is better than zero, so who knows, maybe he will announce it. I can tell you, I'm going to be in the field somewhere. Scotty, the Flagstaff Open is 2 weeks away. We are filling up fast.
Yeah, we've definitely got a lot of interest. We already have, I think the field is already 25% larger than last year, and the spots are getting slimmer. So if people do want to get signed up, they should head to flagstickopen.com. And we mentioned on the show before, there's a great swag for people that come in from a registration standpoint. We've got a tailor-made bag, they get Adidas belt, they get an Adidas pullover, they get a custom Flagstick head cover, you know, about $450 worth of stuff, just for signing up and showing up for the tournament, let alone the two rounds of play, steak dinner, range balls beforehand, draw prizes, for each of the divisions, A, B, and C, and that's May 18th, 19th at Equinel and Kempville, which is open and seems to be playing well, according to the people that have been out there.
I drove by my way to Ottawa last week. Looks good. Green. My buddy lives on the course. He's been playing. It's going to be a fun weekend. I can't wait. We're going to be doing interviews. We got some guys in the area that might stop by for some interviews. I can't wait. Should be a great time. As said, flagstickopen.com to get yourself signed up. It's only $200. That's a steal.
It is. For the value, you certainly can't beat it. So we look forward to seeing a lot of people there. And I think you've got about another week or so to sign up. But yeah, if you want a spot in that field, get to it right away.
I love it. I think it's a good time to wrap it up. A little bit of a longer episode. We hope you enjoy all of the talk about Scotty's trips to Ireland. He needs some rest. You can hear his voice. It's getting strained there. We need to get him to bed. But before we send you off, we need you to do one more thing. We need you to subscribe to the podcast. We need you to rate us. Give us some 5 stars. How many stars?
5 stars only.
5 stars only. Scotty, anything else you want to finish with?
All good. Hopefully everybody just gets out there and gets golfing and enjoys the season.
Go out, hit some balls, get to a range, have some fun. Avoid those pools, eh, Nick? Nick just got some new golf balls. Those are going straight from the water.
They're all going to be gone in the first hole for me.
They're going to be gone.
We'll see you on the golf course, boys.
We'll see you later.